Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Greetings. Our guests are Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, Matthew Felling of Channel 11 News, and Brendan Joel Kelly of the Anchorage Press. The Joe Miller saga goes on and on and on. And in fact, Joe Miller's in court on Friday as we record this show. Steve, where are we? What's the update, realizing that we don't know what the Supreme Court's about
right,
to say?
Right, right. Well, coming up a little bit later on, we were taping, as you said, noon on Friday or so. And about 1:30 in the afternoon, he gets to state his case to the state Supreme Court, the Alaska Supreme Court. So he's going to go as far as he possibly can in state. If he loses this round, he's got the option of moving over to the federal side. And he has told folks in the media that he'll take this all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court to fix the election system here in Alaska.
There's some reporters, including our friend Dermot Cole, believe that this will continue as long as the money holds up. What do you think?
Well, yeah, this is an expensive proposition going through all these legal levels, and I think that's the case. We'll see how committed he is to his principle of, again, once he says he's doing this to fix the electoral system here in Alaska for the future, so this doesn't happen again. We'll see how close he sticks to his principles should he stop getting donations from folks outside and in Alaska to help.
And that's fascinating in itself, isn't it, that the, mm-hmm. the money continues to come in?
It does. A lot of folks who backed Mr. Miller in this Senate race, who are ardent supporters, and they believe in what he says, and they back him, thinking of him as part of the future. It's the same with the same ferocity as Sarah Palin you see in the lower 48. So yeah, they believe in the cause and they'll fund it to until they see things are straightened out.
Thank you, Steve. Matthew. How's this going over in Washington, or have people there, except for a few activists, stopped paying attention? And one important senator.
One very important senator. If you go to Senator Jim DeMint's website, well, there is a link to another website, which is run by him, the SenateConservatives.com. And right there on top of the site is Joe Miller Recount Fund. And it is clear that it's like one of those Twilight Zone episodes that where you're in a room and there's doors on all sides, and every time that Joe Miller reaches for a door, it's just a brick wall. He says, "I'm going to take this to this judge."
Nice metaphor.
"I'm just going to take this to Beistline," and Beistline says, "No, stop, do not pass go, do not collect $200, go to state court." So he tries this. State court judge William Carey says, "You know what? I don't see all these affidavits that you're presenting about voter fraud, all these affidavits you're presenting about misspelling in state statute. Every time he tries something new, there's just a brick wall. But the money keeps coming in from the recount fund." And his principle, because say what you will about Joe Miller, he is a man who is clearly saying letter of the law. He was always a strict constructionist when it comes to the Constitution. He's sticking to the strict constructionist of the state statutes, despite the fact that he can't get anybody to agree with him. And yeah, we're going to see later on today, he gets a half an hour. They should have this routine pretty down pat by now. He gets a half hour, the state gets a half hour, Murkowski's team, and then we see just where the Supreme Court comes
and
out.
And we should
this.
Note that the half hour for each side is typical of appeals. Even in the Ninth Circuit, that's the way it works.
Absolutely. And one quick thing. I mean, I've been speaking with Miller over the course of the week, and conversation continues, and I say, Mr. Miller, what do you make of this Dermot Cole thing? Well, that says that you're just going to keep running until the money runs out. And he says, nothing could be further from the truth. That would not intersect with my cause in this race. And from what I have gleaned in recent conversations, there is a softening. And I'm sorry if that to his supporters, he has taken note of people being concerned about Lisa Murkowski's seniority, and he says, "Listen, I don't think that'll be an issue at all in this race." He's no longer saying that's not my problem. He's saying, "Listen, I've seen some things that lead me to believe that Lisa Murkowski's seniority is not at risk." And also, I asked him because there are some rumors starting to percolate about Don Young in 2012, and he was not coy, but he made it very clear that he's fighting this race this week. we'll see what happens next.
Okay. Brendan, the Anchorage Press had an excellent story by your colleague Scott Christensen, and the Daily News and others have followed up with it on another election story that isn't over yet.
Yes.
The saga of Judge Postma. Your story was very good, the story that the press
had. Scott's story, yes.
Yeah, if, for those who missed it, tell us about it.
Well, here's another candidate that is not happy with the way the election turned out in November.
It would be so good if it weren't for those voters.
Yeah, those darn voters. Postma was voted out with 54% no on retention. He's only the second state judge since the 80s to be voted out. You know, you have your yes or no's. People either don't do it.
The retention process.
Yeah, people either don't fill them out or they fill in yes, yes, yes because they're not familiar. The Alaska Judicial Council waged a campaign against him. They advertised in my paper. They advertised on all sorts of media outlets that Judge Postma was difficult to work with. They quoted from this psychological evaluation that he had to do. There were instances of throwing pins and some
emails at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So anyway, he lost his retention, and then he filed suit against the Alaska Judicial Council, the court system itself, the Commission on Judicial Conduct, and eight employees of the state court system, alleging that, first of all, that he wasn't treated fairly in the workplace. He's Hispanic, and he alleged instances of racism, and he had filed grievances. And then another part of his litigation was that his superiors did not investigate these grievances sufficiently, and he was suing for about $100,000. At the same time, there's a group of voters who are suing to not have the election certified because they don't believe that the Alaska Judicial Council's campaign against him was legitimate within Alaska electoral law. This all came to an end the day before our paper came out, when he had a hearing before the Commission on Judicial Conduct. And he ended up not fighting. He had the same attorney as Mr. Miller and Thomas Van Flein. And they ended up just coming to an agreement that he would drop all of his lawsuits. He would never seek judicial office again in the state of Alaska. And a detail that we found out that I hadn't seen anywhere else, he has to take down his judgepostma.com website. And he has to take down his retained Judge Postma Facebook page as part of this agreement.
This sounds like the term I believe that comes to mind is a rout.
Yeah.
Did they show him a piece of paper and say, did you remember this or how did this work?
they basically validated that he was never accused of messing up a court case or a trial or anything. It was the
improprieties in sentencing or in rendering.
Yeah, none of that.
Justice.
It was being difficult to work with. And and then, you know, he felt put upon. He felt that people were being racist towards him. But yeah, fascinating story. The voters he's had to remove himself. He was an intervener in the suit to not certify the election. The voters still have their litigation to not have the election certified.
And this would presumably revolve around the questions of improprieties by the Judicial Council.
Yeah.
So and the limitations on how far they can go in, quote, providing
exactly.
information to the public.
Because it's a state-mandated but independent citizens commission. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Steve, let's get back to you. Governor Sean Parnell unveils the state budget, which he must do at this time of year by law. It's something like $11 billion, not all of it from the general fund. Give us the overview of the Parnell budget, first after being elected.
Yep, his first on his own term. So he unveiled this a couple of days ago, $11.1 billion. Not a very big increase from the present fiscal year. He looks at this as an infrastructure budget, something to build on some of the programs that he had proposed in during the last legislative session. He's also looking at this to help construct energy projects to bring more affordable energy to different parts of the state. There's money in there for the state's portion of the gas line. There's money in there for a much smaller line for in-state use, should the state have to go that route. Susitna Dam has some cash in there. $60 million, I believe, for road projects.
Yeah, and I think we should note that the Susitna Dam, it's essentially getting it started money. It's not a total appropriation for a $5 billion project or whatever.
Yeah, this thing still has a long ways to go before they start throwing dirt on that project. There's money in there for the ports on both sides of Kinnickarm, Port McKenzie, and also for the Port of Anchorage to help the expansion project there, and I think running a railroad line out to Port McKenzie. So it's an infrastructure kind of a budget. There are a number of projects in there for energy and again, helping to develop energy in South Central and other parts of the state to make it more affordable. So
and
kind of nuts and bolts.
Operating expenses.
And
as
operating
well
expenses,
for the
yes.
various agencies. Okay, right. Matthew, isn't this one of the few states where the budget is actually larger than it was last year? Very unusual.
Yeah, I mean, well, Alaska is in a very distinguished position in terms of state economy as far as that is concerned. And on top of what Steve was saying, there's a lot of money that he's pushing for public safety. That was one of his real big ticket items and during the campaign. And honestly, it's like that Arizona Cardinals coach from a couple years ago after Monday Night Football. They were who they thought they were. Governor Sharon Parnell allocated monies the way he said he was going to allocate money. He wanted safety. He wanted renewables. He wanted all this infrastructure. And unlike some people on the national scene who ran on some certain issues and then they went back to D.C., Parnell is delivering. But of course, every budget is like Blade Runner. And this is the director's cut. There is a long way to go from here to the 4-hour, 10-minute version director's cut until it gets through all the checks and balances. We were talking with a number of lawmakers yesterday. Sorry for running over your speed bump there. And they were saying, listen, this is just the beginning. We're going to need to really fine-tune. And you can just see the knife blades in their pockets. They're waiting to cut this down. They're waiting to cut that down.
Or add.
Or add, but in different places, different pet projects. And this will be one of the ongoing debates. Why are we going up in the middle of where the nation is right now? And is it responsible?
Okay. I want to skip ahead, Brendan. Eddie Burke, man about town, man about Los Angeles.
Yes.
A man who gets in the ear more than anybody else in Alaska. Makes big news for Eddie Burke in California. And we should also add that he's a former candidate for lieutenant governor, former candidate for other offices, and
former talk radio host.
And other formers.
Yes, many formers.
Tell you know this story. Tell us.
I do know this story. I know Eddie. Eddie took his son, Eddie Jr., down to Los Angeles to train to hopefully become a professional boxer. He did the Thursday night at the fights thing up here. Now he's down training at this gym where he might get scouted. So Eddie goes and finds this really cheap apartment building that doesn't require a deposit.
This is his version of going to Hollywood to become a star, right?
Yeah, it's called the Harvey Apartments. And
it also doesn't require pesticides, from what I've been gleaning.
Actually, it's known for being roach free.
Moving on up.
It's one of the attractions there. Anyway, so there's this Ronnie Chasen murder, Hollywood publicist. It's a big deal if you read the Daily
Beast. The terrible murder, and she was very well known. And
A very wealthy, well known woman. The suspect is the person of interest is staying at these same apartments while Eddie's staying there. I don't know if the police came first, but the suspect blows his brains out in the lobby of the hotel. Well, Eddie, being the media savvy sort that he is, goes and snaps some photos of the crime scene on his BlackBerry. Manages to sell those to several different media outlets for a few thousand dollars total.
And he told you this. That's how
Eddie,
you know.
Eddie told me this. I saw him on CNN and I called him up. He also managed to get on CNN, the Associated Press. Eddie became the virtual spokesperson for the Harvey Apartments.
Self-appointed.
Self-appointed, yes. He really milked it. Eddie's along all of his formers that we previously mentioned has learned how to get his face on the camera for sure.
Well, he is media savvy, and when he works the media, I know that he can be quite charming, even though he was quite charming to me and then called me in the next breath to the audience a communist. But what are you going to do? Senator Lisa Murkowski rips the Justice Department for dropping, Steve, its investigation of Bill Allen.
Yeah.
And this is after the election. It's some serious charges were made against Allen for sexual misbehavior with a minor. And she says she wants to get to the bottom of this, and wants, if it takes it, she's going to get to the bottom of this with Attorney General Eric Holder.
Right.
Tell us more.
Well, you've got a couple of people in the Justice Department. You also have a couple of Anchorage Police Department detectives and legal people here in the state who say this should have at least gone to a grand jury to help sort this out. But yeah, you said it was Bill Allen allegedly bringing underage children, girls, to Alaska for sexual reasons. And she wants this to see the light of day. She got a very vague letter from the Justice Department back in October. I think it was October 21st. The letter was dated, and it just said something along the lines of, well, it's a, you know, it's a legal case, and we
Steve,
really can't say anything about it.
The words were wimpy.
Well, that was her characterization. You're right, Matthew.
Wimpy letter.
Wimpy letter. That's what she called it. That's right.
You don't get to say comrade or socialist enough. Or wimpy.
Wimpy. Yeah. So she, that's exactly how she described it. And, she's obviously, if things all work out here in the Supreme Court and all that stuff, and it looks like it will for her, once she gets back to D.C., once she gets back on, like, the Indian Affairs Committee, she's going to have an opportunity, because some of the alleged victims in this case are Alaskan Native, she's going to be able to call in members of the Justice Department and grill them about this whole thing. So she's not done yet on this, and she's hoping it will be Eric Holder that she gets to bring in front of this committee.
Matthew, let's get you in here.
And she is going to be the muscle-bound beachgoer who kicks sand in the face of this wimpy document and of Eric Holder. No, she gets to do this. I mean, we found out this has actually been a spur in the saddle of the APD for a long time. You talk to them. I've done some stories where they've just been frustrated. There always seems to be another wall between them and prosecuting them and furthering this case of Bill Allen, bringing girls in across state lines, clear violation of the Mann Act, and they are always curious. Why not? Why won't they let us proceed? Is it because he has some arrangement? How does this reflect on Cot Cooring? And
right.
She's decided, I think we found out in August, mid to late August, there were some other things going on, when the Justice Department said, you know what, we're just going to drop this case altogether. And maybe that's because Eric Holder just wants to put the whole Alaska thing behind him.
I wonder if Eric Holder just hears the word Alaska and says, my head hurts, can you stop?
And then August 24th happens. Lisa Murkowski all of a sudden has other things that she needs to be devoting her time to, namely figuring out if she's going to be a write-in, figuring out how she's going to do that. Now that she thinks she has won this race, she has announced it hasn't been certified. There's been no concession. She says she's won it. She's getting back to business, and this is one of the first things on her agenda, saying, listen, Eric Holder, listen, you were on attention. Springtime comes. Senate Indian Affairs Subcommittee, be on notice, because we're going to take this
We should
up.
Notice, if I may, that Bill Allen is in prison at the present time, California. And I think it's an interesting question. There are other cases that Bill Allen said on the witness stand, I bribed Ben Stevens. That case has never been brought.
And is this going to be the little... the kick that the investigation needs to get back going.
All we know is the Weirach's going to trial, right?
Yes, and the governor has said, Governor Parnell saw that announcement back in August and said he was sickened by the fact that they were dropping it and that the state was going to start bringing charges against Bill Allen. So in some manner, the Bill Allen investigation is going to resume, whether it's the state holding the stenographer's pencil to it or is it federal government.
And we also know that at least very quietly, the Anchorage Police Department is investigating the case again now, too. They haven't really said too much about where they're at in the case or how far they've gone along, but the detectives there are also looking into this again.
Brendan, the parental notification bill is back in the news. In fact, it's back in court, the abortion amendment. And it seems that we may someday get a resolution to the controversy surrounding this
maybe
constitutional amendment. What's going on in the courts presently, and what does the future look like for this parental notification bill or constitutional amendment?
Yeah. Will it pass 56%? The parental notification, not a parental consent. Parental consent has previously been shot down by the Alaska Supreme Court. Planned Parenthood and the ACLU of Alaska went to court and tried to block the implementation of this law, which was just a few days ago. So that was the first step. That wasn't even particularly litigation. They just said, we don't want this to go into effect right now. The judge sort of compromised. He took the actual language and took out all of the punishment, the jail time, fines, and liability for doctors who do not inform the parents of a minor who's going to have an abortion. So it's basically toothless.
And the punishment was by a constitutional amendment approved by the voters?
Yes. Yeah, it was in the language.
That in itself is unusual.
Yeah, it was in the language, and the judge took that out. And the proponents of it, the Alaska Family Council and Jim Minery is upset with this initial decision that it's basically toothless now because it provides for no punishment
sanctions,
for a doctor,
yeah.
No sanctions for a doctor who doesn't inform the parents. But this is just the first step in something that's going to go on for quite some time because Planned Parenthood is going to try the same thing that they did with the parental consent law and, you know, say that it's unconstitutional. One of their arguments is that to have parental notification for abortion only as relates to pregnant minors rather than other procedures that may relate to pregnant minors mm-hmm. is unconstitutional because it's narrowing it down to just one little piece. This is going to go on for quite some time. The next meeting is scheduled at the end of this month.
In court.
Yeah, meeting in court, I believe, to set the next argument.
District court.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how this is could even be chalked up as a compromise, though. It's like the compromise that a nail gives to a hammer. It's a speed trap without a fine. The cop can pull
exactly.
you over and say, you know what, you were speeding. Catch you around. I mean,
there is no
fiscal punishment. There is no legal punishment.
Well, I suppose, couldn't they post lists of doctors?
In which case, it just becomes a yellow pages for people who actually are seeking to have
Well, I walked into that one.
Yes, very true.
Okay, Matthew, let's stick with you. It's only Christmas, but the Iditarod Trail Committee is back in the news. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, the Iditarod Trail Committee is in the news mostly because the name Iditarod is being used in a way that is very, very curious. Iditarod.Alaska.net is this travel service that promises you the moon. You're going to get these amazing deals at Iditarod.Alaska.net. You click on who we are, and there's these, you know, these model-ready people just dying to take you on a tour of Nome and all around the Arctic areas of Alaska.
Appropriately clothed?
Well, I guess. Yeah, it's Alaska. We're always appropriately clothed up here. But no, this is one of those stories that if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, everywhere else you go on this website, it quacks. You go to the disclaimer, and it says, with all the prices on this site, all the information on this site, everything that we're telling you on this site, we back none of it up whatsoever. So then you go to contact information, and there is no 1-800 number. There is no mailing address. There is no person, which if you are in the travel customer service industry, typically you want people to be able to reach you, and that's a big quack there, too.
What about the question of ownership of the word Iditarod? Now, Iditarod mm-hmm. is on the map. I don't know. Does that make it more difficult, or does the committee own Iditarod Trail Committee, a last great race?
Typically, they are contacted when a business wants to partner up with them, and the people that I've spoken to at the Iditarod Trail Committee say we have never heard a word from these people. They've never interfaced with us. We don't know who they are. We don't know how legitimate they are. But there are also rumblings in the tourism community of horror stories that Iditarod.Alaska.net is connected to some other ne'er-do-wells on the internet that have gone by the wayside and been fined for hundreds of thousands of dollars, sued for hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the latest iteration of these.
And if it's not true, they're going to call up and complain about the coverage, right?
Well,
for example, right here.
I'm just saying that I doubt that would happen.
Okay. Steve McDonald, we are closer to a Knik Arm crossing, or
no,
maybe
but,
not,
yeah.
A major federal agency in Washington, D.C., took some steps that might make us closer to the Kinnickarm crossing. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think it's another regulatory hurdle that that this project has to cross, and it's a big one. It's something that they've worked the last 6-7 years to try and get. And talking about Kibata, the Kinnickarm Bridge crossing
authority.
Kibata. So they've spent about, yeah, like I said, 6-7 years trying to get this thing, got this thing. So now they're really happy about that. But they still have a long ways to go. And there's also issues now over funding. You know, this they wanted to pay off the bridge through through tolls, and it would be about a $5 one-way trip.
Is that what they're talking about? Just $5? You can only pay one way?
That's what they originally were talking about. But now we've got some projections out there, some studies that said, well, maybe the Mat-Su Valley is not going to grow as fast as we thought there would be. So maybe the ridership coming back and forth isn't going to be quite as heavy as we thought. So now there's some different options out there. Would the state help subsidize some of this thing? Would the tolls go up? There's a few things.
I was just going to say, I looked up the toll for the Lincoln Tunnel in Manhattan to New Jersey. It's $8.
Oh, my.
It's considerably shorter than what's proposed here.
Well, I'm going to drive over the Kinnickarm Crossing from there. It's cheaper.
Wouldn't the projections for Mat-Su then seriously undercut the need for the Kinnickarm Crossing Bridge?
Well, you would think so, too. But then again, you know, is it one of those things where you build it,
if they build it, they will come? Yeah.
So, oh, now I can get over there, I'll buy a house. So maybe that spurs the growth over that way, too. So, yeah, I think that's something I'm sure they're considering as well. But, yeah, I mean, that's the whole idea. If maybe you don't have as many folks over there, do we need this thing to go across the road? But I think it's going to grow the population. It's expected to grow, just not as fast as what they originally had projected.
Okay, Steve McDonald, thank you. This is a question that's going to take us a few years to resolve. And thank you for joining us. We'll be back live after Christmas and after New Year's. Good night.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.